Hi, I'm Tim Peter, and welcome to Search Chat, Solo Segment's podcast dedicated to all things search, AI, and content marketing related. Who is Solo Segment? Well, we're a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. You can learn more at solosegment.com. On today's episode of Search Chat, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zaker and I discuss the distinguishing attributes of top-performing marketing organizations and the role that data plays in enabling those organizations to achieve their objectives. We also explain why data ownership is a top priority for brands all around the world, and we explain why CMOs are planning to use that data for AI, personalization, and predictive analytics. All that and more on Search Chat, coming at you now. Well, hi, Steve.
Hey, Tim. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. How's your week been?
It's been good. Good. You know, busy as usual, but I didn't have to travel this week. You had to travel, so.
I did. I did the vaunted fly to LA, get there at 9 o'clock at night, have my meeting in the morning, and then hop on a plane and fly back and arrive back on the East Coast at 9 o'clock at night. So the 24-hour turnaround to LA.
Always the best.
Always the best. And I will tell you, I'm a little more jet-lagged than is normal for what is just a one-night trip. I think the combination of flight to LA and the time change, to say nothing of, you know, having turned a milestone age not long ago.
Getting younger has been a problem.
Exactly. The Benjamin Button jet lag problem, all have experienced.
Yes, indeed.
So, you know, it's funny because those all come together as sort of some interesting data. How's that for a segue?
Oh, that's great. That's nice. Very smooth.
I do what I can. Well, there was this recent survey by B2B Marketing and the MX Group that talked about the differences, that tried to identify the differences between top performing and poor performing B2B marketers. And we'll post a link in the show notes. This was all summarized on business2community.com. But I thought this was really, really fascinating. The biggest finding that they had, that 100% of the top performing marketers identified in this study said that having good, clean, quality data is absolutely necessary to effective B2B marketing, versus only 27% of poor performers who said that that was necessary. And it was the widest gap in the study.
Right.
So I thought that was really fascinating. And I had a hunch you might have a point of view on that. I'd love to hear what you were thinking.
Metrics? Me? An opinion?
Yeah, I know. Crazy.
It is crazy, but I might have an opinion. Well, it continues to amaze me that this is a new discovery to sentient humans. And maybe, again, this is probably not new for these guys, right? That, you know, they've been doing this survey and they've probably, I mean, I don't know what their results are over past years, but, you know, I would imagine that, you know, this is like an ongoing trend. And, you know, I think of just in my own personal life, you know, we had a marketing meeting yesterday afternoon and, you know, we were going through the numbers and the places mm-hmm. where I felt most uncomfortable, where the numbers were either, well, certainly where there were gaps in performance, but where the numbers were like fuzzy, you know, we couldn't quite put our finger on what they meant. You know, I had a lot of discomfort. I'd like to understand them better. And so, you know, I think it's, and, you know, again, I'm not ringing my bell as a top performer, although I like to say, I think I'm above the mean, but, you know, it's that desire to really understand what's going on in your environment that I think really distinguishes that kind of curiosity, but curiosity that's grounded not in, you know, kind of the fluffy stuff, but this really grounded in facts. I think real, you know, it's a no-brainer that it distinguishes top performers from those at the bottom. And certainly that data proves it out, that the, you know, poor performers weren't thinking about their performance in a fact-based way. And that's what data does for you.
It is interesting. Yeah. It, you know, I heard somebody the other day use the term random acts of marketing as, you know, how they had approached things for many years, you know, and I think that really is key to this idea of, you know, you're flying blind sometimes. And, unfortunately, even in digital today, there are still a number of areas where the data is not as good and it's not as clean as we would like it to be. We see this all the time. So it's astonishing to me that when you can get access to data, the people who kind of want to bury their heads in the sand or kind of want to not look at that, you know, and I just think that's really fascinating. You had a funny interaction earlier in the week that you were telling me about the other day, and I think this is a great story if you don't mind sharing it.
Yeah. So as you well know, Tim, part of what we do is search metrics and search success metrics. And so we do a lot of free trials on this product just so people can get an understanding. And our real interest, you know, we certainly want to make search better, but what we really want to do is use data to make search better and data to make the customer experience better. So how can we mobilize that search data downstream in the customer experience to, you know, continue to have this data kind of bear fruit as people go along in their journey? Mm-hmm. Anyway, those trials always follow a very interesting pattern. And I had the opportunity, they're an important prospect for us. And so I had the opportunity to sit in a meeting this week, you know, with the kind of early trial results. Mm-hmm. And you know, no surprise, site search is a place where a lot of companies don't spend a lot of money, resource, attention, mind share. And the results were poor, and they're always poor, right? They're always poor when people first get started because they've been ignoring it, right? They certainly fit into that 27%. They're poor performers and they have poor data. No surprise.
Right.
But you know, it struck me as I was listening to the discussion and as I was reflecting on it afterwards, it's almost like the five stages of grief, right? You know, in order to kind of get the trial started, you have to kind of get over the denial, right? So you have to kind of recognize you have a problem. And when you see that early data, it's the next two stages come fast, right? It's anger and bargaining, right? It's like, no, there's no way that's true. And then it's, wait a minute, how do you measure that? And that can't possibly be right, right?
Oh, so, yeah, you know? Sure.
And so then you get into this like, well, what if we tweak this that way and this the other way? And do we? And it's like, you bet we could do all that tweaking. But guess what? If I give you 100% of the value that those tweaks will give you, your performance still just goes up 2 percentage points, right?
Yeah.
It goes up nothing. What you really have to do is get to very, you know, kind of as quickly as possible, kind of acceptance, right? That, you know, to a point where you have embraced it. And in my mind, I think of that acceptance stage as the action stage, right? Which is, I accept that these measurements are correct. I accept that they are going to help shape and frame the actions that I'm going to take. And then you actually take the actions. And so again, it just kind of struck me interesting as I thought about, you know, how people deal with data, especially when they've been part of that 27% for so long. Because I think if you're a top performer, you know, you might have a very quick evaluation of, do these metrics have more value to me than other metrics? And are the actions that these metrics are going to drive for me have more value than, say, the actions that... So having a discussion with people who are in that top set, it's always very interesting because you're having a value discussion. People who have never seen the data before have almost actively ignored it and really aren't driven by the facts. You know, you do get into this bargaining that can be, you know, that can require some tough love. And it's hard to do when you're kind of in sales mode to have that tough love discussion. But it's like, you know, so, you know, we're going to have that discussion over the next week or two. And, you know, I have to come back to them and say, listen, you know, even if I cede all the points you've made, you know, you're still way below average of the poor performers, much less, you know, below average of the good performers. So, you know, again, it's just interesting that, you know, clearly top performers, they get that the data is important and they're doing trade-offs of resource, attention, and investment. And that's the appropriate discussion to have. But it's these bottom performers who really have to get beyond, you know, the questioning of the data and the process. It's just embrace, right? Because if you're at the bottom, you got a long way to go and bargaining is not the way to spend your time.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny that you say that. I had an experience in the very early days of the company. We talked to a client who, very smart marketer, very sharp individual. I'm keeping this as anonymous as I possibly can because their original numbers were very poor. Mm-hmm. And to your point, I think this is a sign of a top performer. You know, he said to his team, who were definitely in the denial, anger, or bargaining stage, you know, who said, the leader said, if we were 50% better, if these numbers are wrong by 50%, we'd still be terrible.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it was because the numbers were bad enough that the point of view was a little better doesn't make us good.
Yes.
A lot better doesn't make us good. We have to be way better before we can remotely start to get to, you know, kind of average.
Order of magnitude gaps in performance.
Right. So yeah, maybe there's a problem, you know, and he was taking the argument of maybe there's a problem with their methodology. That's possibly true, but you know what? It's probably close enough to accurate that it's, even if it were wrong, it's still a sign of how far from correct we are, you know, and it just made such a huge difference. And the changes made a difference in their business over time. So, I mean, you know, it's that willingness to get behind it and say, yeah, this is something that we need to take ownership of. Yeah,
absolutely.
So speaking of ownership, there was another study that was on CMO.com. So this was from Adobe. Mm-hmm. And they talked to folks about what their top priorities are going forward. And the number one answer by far was data ownership. Mm-hmm. They feel that to succeed in marketing today, you have to own the data about the customer. So, I mean, that was just, you know, a remarkable finding when you think about marketers who are saying, nah, data ownership is really important to us, right, and really drives where we're going. And, you know, just love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, part of it certainly has to be driven on, you know, kind of, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, I think, is there is a lot of external pressure right now on third-party data. You know, and by the way, we, you know, I get this all the time, you know, hey, do you want to buy this list? It's like, sure, I'd love to buy that list, but you know, how much of it is good? And then, by the way, what regulations am I violating by buying your list?
Besides all of them, yeah, yes.
Exactly. I mean, that's essentially it, right? So,
right.
So, you know, data ownership is a big issue because of that. But I think the bigger issue is data is a competitive advantage, right? Data is, I mean, if you have really good first party data, that you know about your customers, about the people who come to your website, et cetera. And by the way, that probably means you have a really effective top of funnel marketing machine that is gathering email addresses, gathering contact, good trade for value at the top of the funnel. So it probably indicates that you're going to be very successful further on because you've had a good value proposition, trade for value, as you've done your prospecting, as you've done your, you know, kind of demand generation. But more importantly, now you have not only that, those great contacts at the top of the funnel, but you have great information about them. And now you get to mobilize that in interesting ways. And for us, you know, as we think about, you know, how we're taking data about search experiences and journeys that come off of search and the metadata and the content, you know, that's, you know, everybody I talk to automatically gets kind of the behavioral personalization opportunity there, mm-hmm. right? Because you know, if you know what your content is about and you know what your visitors are about and you know you've been able to extract intent from your site search data, now you have your own data that is going to help you mobilize, deploy that data in very effective ways downstream. And by the way, the technology to do that already exists in a large part, right? You've already made the investment in your marketing technology stack, so you have kind of this platform that is waiting for great data. And so, yeah, I think this trend for better first party, better ownership of data is an important one because I do think more and more companies who get ahead of the fact that third party data, I mean, is it going away? Probably not, but is it going to be less important? I think absolutely. And especially as we see some of the court cases in the European Union,
you know,
crash out and we really get some clarity on what's allowed and what's not allowed. yeah, owning your data is critically important, but I think marketing execs who understand that it is an important competitive weapon, an important differentiator in the customer experience, an important differentiator in their ability to personalize the experience and drive conversions. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a winning play.
Well, and I think you made such a great point a moment ago, and I want to come back to the personalization question. Mm-hmm. I want to come back to the regulatory question in just a second. I also think you made such a key point a moment ago, and I'm going to slightly amend what you said a moment ago to emphasize the point you made, because I think it's so critical that people miss this. I actually have started saying recently, and I think you will agree with this, that data in and of itself is not a competitive advantage. Everybody has data. Everybody's building data. Everybody's building their data sets. They're doing, you know, the sorts of things you would expect people to do in terms of data lakes and the like to get the data to a usable state.
Yes.
What is the competitive advantage, though, is as soon as you get some data in a usable state, it's that mobilizing it. It's that deploying it. That's really the competitive advantage. Yes. You know, it's not just having the data. It's not just, you know, laying the groundwork. And I realize this may be a subtle distinction, and maybe I'm hammering too narrowly on a semantic point, but it's this idea of why are you getting the data and what are you doing with that data? That's really the thing that's going to provide the competitive differentiation. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, let's face it, most companies, you know, that we work with, most companies out there, your customers are customers of other people too.
Yes.
Right? They buy other things often from your competitors. Yep. And it's not, so you all have a customer list. You probably have many of the same names on that customer list. But it's what you learn from those customers, and more importantly, how you deploy that, how you mobilize it. I love that word, you know, how you mobilize it, I think is going to make the biggest difference in terms of that data actually providing value to you. And I don't think enough companies have really thought through that next step. They're still kind of trying to figure out the frameworks and the groundwork, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when we talk about our new product, Guidebox, which is in beta right now, so not ready for prime time, still doing some, you know, experimentation with it. But, you know, it's interesting when I show people Guidebox, one of the questions that marketing executives ask is, hey, how can I bring that data into my stack, right? So, yeah, sure. Yeah. If you can deliver me this experience and improve progression, decrease bounces, decrease exits, great. But I'd like to take that because they can automatically see the power. And I really like talking and working with those people because they get the mobilization question. They, you know, so yeah, they dig what the product does for them, but they also can see forward and see what the data does for them. And so, you know, that's the thing that I think is required, is that vision and that instinct to be able to see, oh, here's how I can put this data to work versus, oh, here's how I can normalize my data in my data lake. It's like, okay, yeah, that's nice, but let's focus on, you know, where's the value, right, that you're going to extract from the business by putting this to work. And again, you know, it's just, I always know the people who are part of our tribe when they say, I like that, but do you have an API so I can use that data elsewhere? And so,
sure.
It's really neat.
It's a shame we're on an audio program only at the moment because I'm nodding so aggressively right now. I'm going to give myself a
concussion. You know, we've been talking about doing video with this. Maybe we should. Who knows?
That's fantastic. But, you know, so speaking of that, and going back to those points I said I wanted to come back to, you know, there was another survey on marketing charts. It was done by ClickZ and ChatMeter, where they talked to the search trends that are on marketers' minds. And obviously, we do an immense amount of work around search, so I thought it was worthwhile to bring this up. But the three of the top five trends that they brought up, you know, number two on their list, cited by 42% of the respondents, were data protection, privacy, and regulation. Number four on the list by 33% was, with 33% of the respondents, was machine learning. And number five on the list with 31% of the respondents was personalization. So it's interesting that, you know, and probably a good sign for us that the things you were just talking about are among, you know, three of the top five of the top issues when we talk about search trends. And we've given a lot of thought to this, and I'd just love to hear you articulate some of how that applies as we think about it.
Right? Well, you know, this data protection and privacy, I mean, again, everybody is paranoid about that. If your paranoid dial wasn't set to 15, you know, 2 years ago because people were stealing data, now it's set to 25 because of GDPR and what's going on in California and what's probably going to be going on everywhere before long. I was talking to an insurance company exec earlier this week, and he talked about the fact that they weren't all that excited about, no matter what the value was, about SaaS offerings, because not only were they paranoid because of the financial services regulations aspect of it, but they were paranoid because of GDPR and everything else. And so they were, so we had a conversation about, hey, can we do a private cloud and put your tech in there and so whatnot. But, you know, this is table stakes right now. This is table stakes. If you are not thinking about this as a vendor, so certainly we think about it, and you are not thinking about how do you, you know, gather and store and maintain data, you're just not doing your job. And so that is, and by the way, we're not, you know, where I want to be on this, but, you know, where we need to be right now. And it's going to be a constant kind of journey as we go forward to make sure that, you know, we've got good game in this area, but it really is table stakes. And, you know, the other two areas, machine learning and personalization, it's funny, we were just on a call with a client. These guys are, I think they're our most forward-leaning client, I think is the best way to describe them. They're really, you know, they lean into experimentation and whatnot. And, you know, going way back to something we were talking about 20 minutes ago, which is, you know, they are definitely a measurement-heavy organization, right?
How does,
you know, so again, it's kind of interesting to see they got good game in measurements and they got good game in kind of, you know, kind of looking forward and thinking about how do we improve it. But it was funny, we were talking about machine learning with them, and we've got a couple of capabilities that have machine learning built into them. And, you know, it was funny, they were like, we'd like that just because, well, part of it, I think, was checking some box internally that they have for first quarter goals. So great, we're going to help them achieve, you know, get their bonus for the first quarter. But the other piece was, you know, they knew that they could probably spend the next 9 months thinking about how to get started, but why not just get started, right? Why not just pick something? And I've talked about this in the past, right? Which is, you know, pick an area you know and start small and just kind of figure it out as you go. And so I think that, yeah, machine learning is important, but it is intimidating because, you know, data sciences are expensive and, you know, this stuff feels like pixie dust and doesn't seem real. So I think that, you know, it's top of mind. That's great to hear, but it's got to be top of action, right? It's got to be places where you are making and executing bets that, you know, you're going to kind of learn and see how things go and you're going to experiment because I think big bangs, I think if you're going to spend $1 million on a vendor because they told you they have machine learning magic, okay, fine. Probably better to spend $100,000, right, and do something small and learn and then expand as you go along. And by the way, personalization, you know, it's just interesting that those two things are together. I think personalization is a great place to get started. I mean, it's certainly an area where we're focusing, which is how do you bring the data, the patterns in the data and the power of the machine together to deliver a better personalized experience.
Yeah, for sure. So what a transition.
It's almost like we talked about this before the podcast.
Never take a behind the curtain, Steve. Never take a behind. No, so the funny thing about this is, and by the way, this is the day of surveys for us, but there was another survey. This was on Marketing Charts. It was work done by the CMO survey. And what was the top use for AI? Well, it was personalization. And it was predictive analytics. You know, 57%, I'm rounding up, 56.5% said they were using it for content personalization. Another 56.5%, or rather 56.5% of the survey respondents also said they were using it for predictive analytics. Those were the top two answers. And that those were 7 points higher than the next item on the list and a full 17 points higher than the third biggest item on the list. So again, very gratifying for us. But also, I think, incredibly valuable for folks who listen to this show and marketers generally to think about where are people going with this? Where are your competitors going with this? Where are the places you need to be thinking about this? Well, that's kind of where the game is. Absolutely.
And right? Back to this, like, start with what you know. Every marketer understands personalization, right? So it's such a great place to get started. And these areas are rich with data you understand. So you're going to be able to sniff out, like, you know, the BS AI from the real AI, right? The AI that's driving value. And by the way, there's a lot of BS AI out there. So what if...
What?
I know, no. It's shocking. It's shocking. but... I was really excited when I saw these numbers because it told me that, you know, we're kind of coming out of the trough of disillusionment, perhaps, maybe not, but, you know, at least people are out there working on it and doing something. Yeah. Now, I think, again, some of this stuff probably doesn't pass the sniff test, but at least, you know, we see some action out there. And that was really, really encouraging because I think until AI becomes practical and actionable in your business day to day, that quite frankly, it becomes a lot less pixie dust and magical and a lot more, it's just a tool sitting in the toolbox. And sometimes I'm going to do rules-based personalization. And sometimes I'm going to need some smarts because the data is complex and I don't understand it or, you know, whatever, but it's just another tool. And this encourages me that, you know, AI, ML, et cetera, is becoming more of just one of those tools that you have in your toolbox and it's actually getting put to use in the market.
Well, it's funny. We did a show, it may have been our last show, about, you know, how the CEOs who think that AI is going to be bigger than the internet. Yes. And I think it's right. I also think it's true that, you know, you talk to people today, they don't talk about the internet. They talk about a mobile app. They talk about their website. They talk about personalization. They talk about email marketing. They talk about search, right? They talk about the applications that depend upon the internet to work. But the internet is just there. It's just underneath the hood of all of these other things that we know to be effective marketing techniques, right? Effective marketing tactics. And I think that same thing will be true of AI. It won't be that it's, you know, we have an AI application. It's that AI will be built into the application because, of course, that's the right thing to do.
We have an awesome personalization engine.
Right.
And you know what? There's lots of tech under the hood that will run it, and AI is going to be one of them.
Exactly. And the same will be true for predictive analytics, and the same will be true for, you know, customer segmentation, and the same will be true by, you know, optimizing content marketing. I mean, these are all just pieces of a whole where AI will play a role,
right?
But in some cases, the role is going to be larger. In some cases, the role is going to be smaller. It's really about, are you using it to drive that great customer experience? And are you using it to, you know, understand your data more effectively so that you can, you know, to bring this full circle so that you can mobilize that data and actually create the right kind of customer experience?
Yeah, you bet. And when that is true, we will have a whole new set of buzzwords that we can use to sell the next generation of whatever it is we're selling.
Blockchain, 5G.
Absolutely. You bet. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to that day, Steve.
Indeed.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, looking at the clock on the wall, I think we've kind of wrapped up all the things we wanted to talk about this week. But any parting thoughts you want to leave folks with before we go?
Yeah, just get to work, get started. Good Lord. You know, we talk a lot about this stuff. And, you know, I did a blog post a week or so, maybe it was even earlier this week, I don't remember. But it was this, like, you know, hey, time's ticking on the first quarter. What have you done? What have you achieved? Are you getting there? And part of it is, you know, first quarters in a lot of business are slow, right? And so, So now we've gotten through the first quarter. Hopefully we've hit the kind of softball objectives we put out there. But so much of this is get started, you know, start with where you know and experiment, measure, monitor the output, understand the value, rinse and repeat. And so, yeah, I guess, you know, first quarter's running out. Hopefully you've got some good objectives for the second quarter and just get started.
Words of wisdom. Excellent. Steve, as ever, a pleasure. Look forward to catching up with you next time.
You bet. Take care, Tim.
Take care. Search Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment is a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. And learn more at solosegment.com. If you like what you've heard today, click on the subscribe links you can find at solosegment.com/podcast, on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts can be found. You can also find us on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/company/solosegment, on Facebook at facebook.com/solosegment, on Twitter using the Twitter handle @solosegment, or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. For Search Chat, I'm Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next time here on Search Chat. Until then, take care, everybody.